Same old, same old down at the Mad Stad this week as Reading took to the road twice and came home with little more than a consolation strike. Will this return to the relegation zone spell the end for Paul Clement, or can he hold out hope that a vital win in RG2 on Saturday will save his job? Welcome to the Tyler Stem Podcast, episode 173, with your host Mark Mayo, and we'll be discussing two defeats on the road in the past 7 days for the Royals. And doing that with me this Tuesday evening, as we come to record this, is Ollie Allen, who was there on Saturday down in Swansea, having a great time, no doubt.
Yeah, it was a good afternoon in South Wales, but obviously I'm at Cardiff Uni, so it's quite a short trip for me. But once again, another defeat for Reading.
Yeah, funnily enough, I went to Cardiff Uni as well, and went on my sole trip down to Swansea. We threw away a two-goal lead in the Premier League and ended up drawing 2-2. So it's a bit of a poison chalice having to go down there for a local game in Wales. But nothing too bad with the trip, is it?
No, I mean, I was at the 0-0 game at Cardiff at the final day of last season, actually. So two games in South Wales so far in my time at uni, and still get to see a win. So hopefully next year, whether we'll be playing maybe Newport if we go down and they come up. So that could round off a hat-trick of Welsh clubs, potentially.
Funnily enough, my other trip actually was the only Cardiff game that I got to see while I was at the uni was the Alex Pearce absolute nightmare game when he gave away a red card and a penalty and an own goal. Everything couldn't have gone worse for him. So, anyway, less about ourselves and more about Reading Football Club, and we'll be talking about those two defeats in the recap in a few seconds' time.
The Tylehurst End Podcast.
Read the blog
on thetylehurstend.com.
So, Ollie, the state of affairs as it stands, 4 defeats out of 5, 1 win in 6, and 2 points adrift of safety, 4 points adrift of 19th place, and 13 points off the playoffs. We thought this season was going to be a bit tricky. Did we really think it was going to be this tricky?
I mean, I said at the start of the season that I thought we would be in a relegation battle. I think I actually predicted us to finish 23rd, actually. So I think from my point of view, potentially, yes. But yeah, I think it's certainly not panned out as we certainly would have hoped. I mean, we keep getting that odd win, you know, the win against Preston, the 3-0 win against Hull at home that seemed to give us a bit of a boost, you know, and then the win against Millwall the weekend before last, the 3-1 win. But yeah, we are now very much in that relegation battle. You know, we can't build on those wins, two defeats in the last week, the one at Birmingham and the one at Swansea. So yeah, it's quite difficult to watch at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, just looking at the table, it feels very odd. I mean, teams like Brentford and Villa and Sheffield Wednesday and Wigan are teams we probably thought were doing quite well with the teams above us. But also there's Preston and Rotherham and Millwall above us. Millwall having won 3 of the last 4. The only one of those they didn't win was against us. So, you know, it feels like the teams that have overtaken us are not the best teams in the league by any stretch of the imagination.
I mean, it's a very packed sort of mid-table area. I mean, QPR and Birmingham were sort of two teams at the end of August that we were looking at as sort of struggling with us. I mean, I think QPR were also, I think they were bottom of the league without any wins, but you know they've managed to turn it around, and both themselves and Birmingham, I think, are now only 1 or 2 points off the playoffs. So I think, you know, that shows that, you know, what a couple of wins can do. They were very near the bottom. Brentford appeared to be going very, very well. They were in the playoffs, but they're now down in 16th. I think, you know, they lost Dean Smith to Aston Villa, and the new guy coming in hasn't done too well. But you know, I think it does show. I mean, I don't want to sound like Paul Clement by saying that we're close to mid-table, you know, when we are 2 points adrift in the bottom three, but it does show, you know, if you can get, you know, those 2 or 3 wins, you know, to build that momentum, you can get into that mid-table pack and potentially try and climb up the table. But as I say, you know, that's still quite a long way off in the form that we're in at the moment.
Yeah, and it feels like really after these two games, it feels like we're sort of treading very familiar patterns, aren't we? With that Birmingham defeat, the way I've set it out as a sort of a classic Clement formula. We play okay in the first half, have a couple of missed chances. We have an entirely self-inflicted opener that we concede a corner from nothing, and then they score the corner. The heads drop, 2-0 down, and then we finally do something when it doesn't matter. And I mean, that must be countless games have ended up in that fashion under this manager.
Yeah, I mean, it's, as you say, it's what we've seen all season, really. I mean, it was 0-0 at half time, and we've actually done okay, I think, in the first half. I think if you look at the half time table, actually, we're not actually I think we're sort of mid-table area, if you know, if the game's ended at half time. But it's just that second half, and again, I think it's the 49th minute that first goal comes, as you say, self-inflicted. It was Liam Kelly, I think, who put the ball out for a corner, something like 50 yards out, which was a strange decision to do in itself. And then again, it's that goal coming from a corner. I think that was the fifth game in a row we conceded the goal from a corner or a set piece. So it's those errors that we're just not learning from, as you say. Heads drop and they get that second goal. Lukas Jukovic, who's on good form anyway, got, you know, he was always going to score. He's in a rich train of form. So, but yeah, I think, you know, you look at that game and think a point. I think especially after winning that Millwall game, you just want to go there and get something to try and build up momentum. I mentioned it early, you know, we just can't build on these wins at the moment. So even a point at St Andrews, obviously Birmingham, a very tough team to beat this season. I think they've only lost twice, I think. I mean, they've drawn quite a lot, but, you know, to get a point at St Andrews certainly wouldn't have been a bad result. But as you say, when that first goal goes in, our, you know, sort of morale is really poor at the moment. I think especially, you know, when you are losing, you know, so often, when that first goal goes in, it's very hard to recover from that.
Yeah, I'm just looking at the stats at the moment, and you can see that the Birmingham goal goes in at 49 minutes, and we have a shot actually at 51 minutes. We then don't have a shot on Birmingham's goal all the way from 51 minutes. They go 2-0 up, and then it's the 77th minute is our next shot on goal. And that, away from home, is it? Do you think there's a real difference between how Reading are playing away from home and at home at the moment? Because for me, it feels like, for the start of the season, we were obviously playing so badly at home that we'd picked ourselves up away from home and got a couple of good points somewhere. And the way we were playing was a little bit more free and a little bit more structured to a point, and hence why we were kind of only losing by the odd goal most of the time. But at the moment, it's all or nothing. We've gone from being bad at home and relatively decent away, and now we're kind of relatively decent at home and we're just bad away.
Yeah, I mean, we got the draw at Blackburn. You know, probably should have won that game. We'll see 2-0 up at half time before the two penalties in second half. You know, got a good point at Villa. The first win of the season obviously came at Preston. But yeah, it's a strange one. Obviously, I mean, I think, you know, potentially they're trying to go for it a little bit more. You know, being a bit more open, you know, as we go in search of those wins. But, you know, both Liam Kelly and John Swift started on Tuesday at Birmingham. I think again also at Swansea. The weekend, and that for me, I think especially away from home, that midfield is just far too lightweight. It leaves you very, you know, open at the back. I think especially without someone like David Myler in there, who, you know, I think he is fit, but he's just not being picked. And obviously especially with Saïd Ezatalahi out as well, that leaves a big hole in that midfield. I'm not sure that's a coincidence that when Ezatalahi gets injured, we are looking a little bit more open in midfield.
Yeah, well, I want to come on to the selection a little bit later, because obviously Mo Bower is not in the team at the moment. We'll talk about why at the end of the recap, and also John Daddy Bodvarsson, want to talk about him. But let's talk about the Swansea game as a whole. And this is, I mean, it kind of fits the similar pattern to Birmingham, just slightly the other way around, in the sense that we go 1-0 down in the first half and then have our good little period in the second half, completely fail to convert that momentum into a goal, really. Do you think, it seemed to me from watching on the highlights that Yaku Mate's aerial presence was pretty much the only thing that we could hit in the box reliably. Was it a case of there being lots of shots on goal but not really any pressure, or were Reading actually relatively decent in that period at the start of the second half?
Well, I mean, I think for much of the first half, when they did deservedly trail, Swansea obviously got the goal from the penalty, they just couldn't really get hold of the ball at all. Obviously, Swansea renowned, you know, for their possession style of play, and they've certainly got that back under Graham Potter, and Reading just sort of stood off them, you know, were very happy for Swansea to pass the ball around them, and it meant they could barely get over the halfway line, really. But I think Paul Clement did make that switch at half time, and Reading were much more keen to get onto the ball, you know, try and create chances. But yeah, the main sort of threat we had was, you know, whipping those balls in to Yaku Mate, whether it was Sam Baldock on the wing whipping them in, or Tyler Blackett put a couple of decent balls in as well. But yeah, I mean, he was the main target man. I think actually most of the chances actually came following the introduction of John Daly Bodvarsson, which actually sort of led to Mate, you know, naturally sort of going out wide. But even then, you know, he was still in that middle of the box. He was the only one really with a black shirt on that was, you know, trying to get on the end of those balls. And whether he could do any better, I mean, there was quite a bit of pace on all of the balls. But, I mean, really, yeah, look, we've got to be taking those chances. I mean, you know, when we got to Wembley 2 years ago, I think we were the second most clinical team in the league or something, you know, in terms of sort of shots per goal. You know, and that obviously that was largely thanks to the form of Jan Kernighan. But that is a big issue right now. We saw it against Birmingham, and you know they were decent chances against Swansea that perhaps, you know, someone like Jan Kernighan 2 years ago would have converted, and we would have got a point or gone on to get a win. But right now, you know, it's just not happening for us.
Yeah, it does seem to me like there's a real dearth of luck has been around the club for some time now, and I'm certainly not suggesting that we'd be back in the playoffs if we had a bit of luck, but we certainly don't have much. And in the first half, Sam Baldock had a goal somewhat controversially ruled out. I think it was given for offside, and I mean, in the Championship you don't get all the luxury of the replays and everything, but this idea of luck, it's annoying, because I don't want, in the same way that when we were good in the playoffs, I didn't want to say, oh, it's only because of luck, even though we kind of have to acknowledge with hindsight there was a decent amount of luck in there. At the moment, I don't want to say to the players, well, we're not there because we were unlucky, because yeah, we are unlucky, but it's certainly not the main reason that we're struggling.
No, I mean, look, I was sat at the other end of the ground, so I couldn't really see that offside one, and it's not particularly clear on the highlights. I mean, it looks a little bit tight. I think Paul Clement, I think he probably had the best view, and he would say that it was a bit harsh on Reading. But look, as you say, we might well have had that luck 2 years ago. You know, but we still sort of took that luck. We were still there to take those opportunities to take the wins against the teams that weren't performing on their day. You know, and in much the same way, you know, this time around, we might not be getting that luck, but that isn't just by itself. You know, we are making those errors. You know, as we mentioned, Liam Kelly's, you know, pointless 50-yard putting the ball out for a corner against Birmingham. That's not luck. That's just an individual error. Again on Saturday, the first goal, Swansea's penalty, it was a silly foul from Andy Yeards on. That's not luck. That he was well beaten, and it was a silly foul from him. I think the second goal as well, Leandro Bacuna was sort of dilly dallying in the middle of the park and was dispossessed, and Swansea broke and countered. So yes, there is the element of bad luck, but at the same time, we're not really helping ourselves.
Yeah, and the thing that the sort of luck argument comes back to me, the thing that's just in my mind as you were talking then, was how the 1-0 win over Leeds that we had quite far towards the back of that playoff season at home with Jan Kermigant's goal. Yes, Jan Kermigant took a bit of a pot shot. Yes, it wasn't a great save that the keeper made as it went into the net, but we did make it via, I think it's Gareth McCleary, with a very quick thinking throw in. Yeah. And that's the sort of thing that's different. That's not what we're doing at the moment. We're not having that extra bit of creativity. We're not finding ourselves in the position to then convert that luck. So I mean, it's just something that we're going to have to watch and see how that progresses, but it certainly isn't something that I'm expecting to change anytime soon. Something that was a bit of a change down in Swansea was, as you touched on then, Andy Yadom's penalty. That, I mean, there's no complaints really. It looks like he's just a bit frustrated as he comes into the back of him that he's already been beaten. Seemed like it sounded like his worst game for the club.
Yeah, I think I used that exact phrasing in the player ratings that I did, that it was definitely his worst game for the club. I mean, which isn't saying an awful lot. I mean, he's probably been one of Reading's better players so far this season. You know, so this performance was sort of a rarity. I mean, yeah, I think Dan James on that left wing for Swansea looked a real, real talent. I think he's only 20 years old, and I'm not sure if he'd played a league game actually before this season, but yeah, no, he was excellent down that left hand side and really got the better of Yeardom on four or five occasions, really. You know, including that penalty, yeah, I think James just sort of skipped past him, and Yeardom, I think he is quite quick actually, Yeardom, but James just got past him far too easily, and then you know, just drags him over in the box. You can't really complain about that one. And then, you know, for the rest of the game, really, I think Dan James sort of knew that he could get the better of Yeardom, you know, and was bombing up and down that flank all the time and putting crosses in that Swansea, you know, could have got a couple more crosses from. I think the second goal did come from that flank as well. I mean, I'm not sure if it was James on the left-hand side, but it was certainly down Yeardom's flank that he couldn't catch up with either the ball or the man, and that ball goes in for McBurney to convert. So, yeah, it was probably Yeardom's worst game for the club, but, you know, certainly not a performance, you know, that should be leading to him being dropped or anything like that.
No, and he was back on to the right back position after a few weeks, moved over to left back. It looks like Chris Gunter has also kind of lost out in the race at the moment with Tyler Blackett to get into the team out of the three of them. Those are the two, Blackett and Yadon, favoured at the moment. However, Reading have now conceded 16 goals in the league away from home. That's the joint second worst. And we've conceded overall 9 in our last 4 games. We've spoken about the attack being an issue. The defence is fully an issue as well. And it seems to me that Clement, when he started the season, knew what he was going to do. He was going to kind of do 4-4-2, bit of basic, bit of high pressing. Certainly we saw that in the Derby game. Just try and, you know, eke out a few results, kind of like he did at the back end of last season against QPR. And I think it's Preston as well. But I don't know, it just seems like he's maybe gotten a bit bored with that. And we've gone back to 4-3-3. We've gone back to a very kind of Stam-esque setup with a striker put out wide, kind of Bulldogs basically playing where Graben used to play. We've got two centre midfielders, as you mentioned earlier, who aren't really combative in any sense of the word. It just seems like the defence, it's almost like he's lost his grip on the defence. Considering that was the one thing that at the start of the season I felt was going relatively well, we've now lost it.
Yeah, I mean, it was interesting to see him bring John O'Shea in for Thiago Alori on Saturday, which was potentially quite a harsh decision on Thiago Alori. He's probably been one of Reading's better players so far this season. But, you know, at the same time, John O'Shea's done quite well, actually, you know, surprisingly well whenever he's come in to that side. And, you know, I actually think we actually look quite good when we play five at the back. But then, you know, when you play five at the back, you're potentially putting that three in midfield. And again, it's who you put in that midfield, as I mentioned earlier. You know, without someone like David Myler or, you know, more realistically, side as a Talahi in there, I think that's potentially where that midfield is, you know, lacking that protection for the back four or the back five. Because without that player, I mean, obviously with Swift and Kelly in there, you're asking Leandro Bacuna to be sort of that holding role, and that's not really a role that he, you know, carries out that effectively. I mean, he can drive the team forward quite well, but defensively he's not, you know, the most solid. So look, I think you look at, I think if you were to name sort of Reading's, you know, top three or four players, I think people like Thiago Alori and Liam Moore, you know, and even Andy Yeardon to an extent, you know, would sort of be in that upper category. So it's not really an issue that sort of the defence, from my point of view, the defence perhaps, you know, isn't too bad, but it's sort of those in front of them. I think we've seen so many times this season that gap between midfield and defence is just far too big, and that's due to that midfield sort of just not tracking back at all.
Well, we'll see how Clement approaches the Bristol City game on Saturday with his formation. As I sort of said a few times today, I don't predict anything massively will be changing for that. Paul Clement, after the Swansea game, I'll just regale some of what he told the media, said, "I was pleased with the performance in the second half. I wasn't in the first and the players weren't either. I had to do something to try and help them. And we were much better in the second half." He doesn't say what particularly he did to help them, but, you know, he's claiming it. "I thought we made a good game of it. The spirit was good and tactically we looked good, but we just couldn't get that goal. And that might have given us the belief to go on to win the game. I'm not happy. The players aren't happy and the fans aren't happy with the results and our position in the league. No one is more disappointed than me." I mean, John Danny Bodvarsson might have a good point to be disappointed. He's the top scorer for Reading in the league by some distance with 7 goals, and yet he was dropped for Swansea. And I'm not entirely sure Clement is the man to pick the best team for Reading at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, it was a slightly strange one. I mean, obviously, he came back from an injury against Birmingham. You know, I think he played just over an hour there, you know, so, you know, he might not potentially have been fit enough to start again. But look, Yaku Mato's obviously the man in form before coming into the Swansea game, 3 goals in 2 games. And it's interesting that he's sort of now Clement's, you know, potentially preferred central striker. You know, you might naturally think that in a team containing Mato and Bulldog, that it'll be Bulldog in the middle and Mato out wide. But, you know, Bulldog's been playing on the wing, you know, not been doing too badly. I mean, he's got good turn of pace on him, but he didn't do an awful lot against Swansea. But yeah, the Bodvarsson one's an interesting one. You know, I've never been Bodvarsson's biggest fan. You know, I think, you know, he will get you goals. I think he's, obviously, as you mentioned, he's Reading's top scorer this season, and he gets in those positions. But I think, especially away from home, you know, he's not going to be, you know, that man you know, chasing down those balls that Yaku Mate is. I think, you know, Mate chased virtually everything on Saturday, and, you know, he might not have got there half of the time, but, you know, that desire to get there, I think he will run for the whole 90 minutes. So I'm not sure whether you can say the same of Brod Vars. You know, he's a good target man. He, as I say, he will be in those positions to score, but, you know, whether it's a mixture of him not being quite fit enough, or whether sort of Clement wanted, you know, maintain that central role away from home, we'll have to wait and see for the home games.
I don't know. I think he's a good honest runner, Brod Vars, and with the fitness terms, he may not be able to do it for the 90 minutes. But in my idea, with that sort of Clement 4-4-2 trying to eke out results, I think there is a role for Mate alongside Brod Vars. Isn't something that we necessarily discussed at the start of the season, and obviously means Sam Baldock might be out of the picture, and it certainly means players like Mark McNulty and Danny Loader aren't near the team. But with the wingers that Reading have, with Sims and Gareth McCleary's now back in the team, I think there's a potential for those two to be the sort of two joint sort of target men, as it were. And one player who isn't going to be supplying them, well, I don't know when he's coming back, but he certainly hasn't been this week, is Mo Barrow, who is currently on disciplinary leave. No news that I could catch of it on Saturday. He says that Paul Clement says it's an issue with the club and the player. But it's probably just the last thing we need, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, there was obviously previous history between Clement and Barrow at Swansea. I think Clement loaned out Barrow to Leeds when he first arrived, and then obviously sanctioned his sale to Reading the next summer. So yeah, I mean, look, I think Clement, obviously he's not really prepared to sort of reveal the extent or the reasons why. But I mean, realistically, I think, you know, Mo Barrow last season was obviously one of Reading's better players, joint top scorer, I think, with Brod Vars. But, you know, he's not actually started this season, you know, in particularly good form. He hasn't scored yet so far this season. But yeah, I mean, it's certainly interesting that, you know, when you look at those wing options, you know, he's clearly not prepared to play Josh Sims that often. I think he's only got two starts, Josh Sims, and he's got this bizarre perseverance with Sonny Aluko. You know, he just can't do anything right at the moment. And as you mentioned, Gareth McCleary coming back in, Callum Harriott potentially fit again, but, you know, who knows whether he'll be able to stay fit for 5 minutes. But I think there comes a point where Barrow has to come back in, just because, you know, we know what a threat he can be. He might not have done it much so far this season, but, you know, we've lost two games in a row now. You know, if that run continues, then we're going to be left with little choice other than to bring Barrow back into the mix. But, you know, whether it's an issue between him and the club, or whether it's an issue between him and Paul Clement, you know, we don't know. So does, you know, say Clement gets sacked next week, does Barrow then come back in straight away because it was an issue between him and Clement? I think, look, whatever the case, I think he does need to come back into that fold as soon as possible, really.
Well, it's certainly one that we'll be watching on the tireless then, as the coming days and weeks go by, and the team selection on Saturday will be very interesting to see. We'll be discussing that a bit later on, but we're going to go on now to the news bites and see what's been going on around the club in the last few days.
Reading News Bites on the Tarlhurst End podcast.
Right, let's get cracking then with the periphery / more successful teams of Reading Football Club. The women, however, did a couple of weeks ago lose 6-0 to Arsenal in the BBC Red Button game. It was one that we were like at the other side of the saying, oh yeah, go and watch that. It's Reading women on the Red Button on BBC. Good. I think it's a Sunday afternoon in watching Reading, and sadly that was a 6-0 defeat, so not so great. But back in Reading on Friday night, it was a 1-1 draw with Manchester City. So the women are currently hold up sixth mid-table in the Women's Super League. They next host Bristol City on Sunday. Under-23s second in Premier League Division 2 with a 2-1 win over Stoke. They're now 9 without defeat. Also in the Premier League International Cup, they recently drew with Sparta Prague. Danny Loader getting a brace there with a late equaliser. They now face Feyenoord in the final game of the group stage to find out if they will get through to the knockouts. And the Under-18s, they lost 4-2 to Arsenal after a 7-0 hammering by Fulham. So they're 8th in the Premier League top tier table for the Under-18s. But not some great results then. And some tireless then news as well. We have Paul Clement's approval rating up on the site now for you to go and vote on Paul Clement. It's a simple 1-5 system. 5 if you're happy with him, 1 if you're not. And we'll use that to determine exactly what the fans are thinking. And speaking of which, our Player of the Month competition is open, isn't it, Holly?
It is indeed. I think it's Antti Jääkilä, who I'm not sure anyone would have imagined being up for a Player of the Month award.
very true.
Last month, or let alone 2 weeks ago. So yes, Antti Jääkilä, Thiago Elori, and Yaku Mate are the 3 candidates to choose from.
Yeah, and I think I'm going to go for Yaku Mate out of those. Elori, he's been in and around, and he's been very consistent, I think, this year. But yeah, for this month in particular, our defence has kind of gone off the boil. Jääkilä has come in, but again, same sort of thing. The defence hasn't been great. Just imagine where he'd be this month without Yaku Mate, perchance, and without anyone else to pick up the slack. We certainly wouldn't have beaten Millwall, and would be 0 points for the entire month, I think.
Yeah, I'd probably gonna go for Yaku as well. I mean, it's great to see him get 3 goals. See his first 3 goals, I think. He got 1 in that first season in 16-17. But yeah, great to see him get 3 goals. I mean, he's certainly been involved a lot more than I expected him to be this season. And as I mentioned earlier, leading the line, being that central striker. And they were 3 really good goals as well, actually. I mean, it was a strong guided header against Millwall from, almost the edge of the box. I mean, it's quite rare you see a header go in from the edge of the box, but that went in against Millwall. It was quite a clever header down into the ground for a second against Millwall. And obviously then that goal against Blackburn was probably the best of the bunch, obviously. I mean, it mattered little in the end because Reading lost the game anyway, but, he took the ball down really, really well from Andy Eardom's over the top ball, and it was a great finish. But and I think, also I think I think Mate has that connection with the fans. He's got quite a strong presence on social media, and even during the games, I think you can see that he cares. Each time that he I think especially on Saturday against Swansea, each time one of those headers, went wide or went over the bar, there was real frustration in his face. And I think, it's those little things. I think, it might just be me, but as a fan, I think when times are tough as they are at the moment, it's good to see that the players care. And I think you can visibly see the frustration on Yaku Mate's face all the time.
It feels to me like, I mean, he's got a skill, which is great, Yaku Mate. He's very physical, and he can head the ball with good direction and good power, and that's something to build on. And it does seem like he certainly cares for being a footballer and is desperate to make it as a footballer. But he seems to me to be perhaps a bit more of a classic Reading signing than a lot of the players we've been signing over the past 4 or 5 years. He's a player who came into the PSG sort of fold as a young player, perhaps knew from an early age he wasn't quite going to make it at such a big club, went down to a team like Reading, went on loan and sort of grafted away a little bit, got some experience, and now he's back. And that sort of path is a path that we've seen so many times over the last 2 decades or so. I think of Steve Sidwell, James Harper, both with a sort of Arsenal links, Leroy Leiter coming through at Chelsea and Bristol City. It can work, and it's certainly one that that the club has made use of in the past.
Yeah, I mean, look, it was good to see him. I think a lot of people probably, when he went out on loan to Sochaux in Ligue 2 last season, potentially thought that his time at the club might be over. But, he's obviously proven last season. I mean, I can't say I watched much second division French football, but, I think Paul Clement's obviously seen something in him, and given him that chance this season, and he's taken it quite well. I mean, 3 goals, as we mentioned, in the last month, and got the goal against Birmingham in the League Cup back in August as well. So he's obviously taking he's taking his chance. He doesn't want to be playing second division French football. He wants to be up there, and whether he'll make it as a Premier League striker, then I probably doubt that. But you see many players sort of be sent out on loan, and not really put in that effort. And but Mate's gone out on loan, come back and done really well.
So yeah, we'll see how he gets on. And it's gonna be an interesting one to see how, if potentially Paul Clement leaves, exactly what happens with Yaku Mate will be a very interesting subplot, because he's the type of player I suspect, while I've been relatively glowing in my praise from that just then, if he doesn't fit into your style, his use to the team drops off quite considerably, because he is somewhat limited by his skills. So we'll see how the Tarlhurst End Player of the Month vote goes out. We'll obviously be reporting on that on the website, so keep an eye on that and on the social media channels. Speaking of which, we've had our Gmail account, thetarlisten@gmail.com, and our Twitter and our Facebook and all the rest inundated with messages for the mailbag.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
at the Tarlhurst End
and facebook.com/thetarlhurstend.
Few questions then this week, and quite a broad eye a lot of people are taking, not just focusing necessarily on the Swansea and Birmingham games, but on the state of the club as a whole. Lee sending in this tweet saying, "You are the new manager of Reading FC. You're told by Ron Gawler you can sign only two players in January. Who are they and why?" So Ollie, he's asking for two players that you'd sign in January. I think I'll go for positions first. I think probably, I'm tempted to bring in a wide man and a central midfielder. I know we're heavily stocked in those positions, but it just seems to me like the players we have at the moment, if we can move them on, then great. But if not, they're just going to have to sit there because they're just not really good enough.
Yeah, I was thinking, obviously I saw this question earlier, and I was thinking about this, and you know, I was trying to think of positions that perhaps we're not, you know, so well stocked in. But as you mentioned, you know, it is actually quite a big squad. I think it's just full of players who potentially, you know, aren't quite good enough. You know, I've gone for that sort of creative midfielder as well. We don't really sort of know the budget of the owners, and we're not, you know, quite sure who's available. But yeah, I've gone for a creative midfielder. And I think, you know, John Swift and Liam Kelly are sort of, you know, the two options in that sort of position at the moment, but aren't quite cutting it. And then I've gone for a clinical striker, but just a striker that will get you goals. I mean, obviously, Bord Varson's obviously got six goals so far this season, and we have got Baldock, and we talked about Yakimoto quite a lot, and not forgetting Mark McNulty, who seems to be disappearing by the week after his move from Coventry in the summer. But you know, I spoke earlier about just sort of our inability to take our chances, and you know, we saw QPR. You know, we mentioned that they were struggling down at the bottom of the table. You know, they got in Tom Ahmed and Naki Wells both in on loan. I think Ahmed's doing especially well down at QPR. You know, so that shows just what a difference, you know, that top striker can make. But yeah, a striker and a creative midfield would be the two sort of positions I'd potentially be looking at bringing in January.
Yeah, and Lee also wants to know if we could trim the squad by 10 players. Who would you be letting go? I don't quite have 10 off the top of my head, but I'm going to throw in a few names here. I think it's dangerous to start throwing out all of your more experienced players, but I think some, you know, McShane, Popper, Aluko, I think I'd probably happily let go. At what point do you start to wonder if we need Josh Sims coming through as a sort of lone player when, you know, in an ideal world, maybe bring in some more? You don't need three goalkeepers. Perhaps you send Walker out on loan, or let Yarkola or Manoni go. What other names have you've come up with for that?
Pella Clement's not really playing at all at the moment. So, I think he had the opportunity to go in the summer, but Paul Clement, not his father, said that, you know, his opportunities would, you know, might not be at Reading in the short term. But Pella Clement was obviously keen to develop at Reading. But yeah, I mean, look, I'm not sure he's played at all this season in the league, so he'd certainly be Dave Edwards, I mean, obviously he's been injured since the summer. I'm not sure whether he'll be back sort of until December, January time. But you know, you look at someone like David Myler can't get in a team at the moment when fit, so I'm not sure how much hope that leaves Dave Edwards with at all. I got Mark McNulty down, you know, potentially for a loan move. Obviously I think he would have expected to play a lot more after signing in the summer, but you know, can't seem ready to get a game at the moment. You know, even when Bod Varson and Bordock were injured, he was still being left on the bench. So potentially a loan move away from him. But yeah, other than that, much of the same names that you mentioned. Paul McShane can't really get inside at all at the moment. He might be injured, and Sonny Aluko for obvious reasons.
I'm just looking at McNulty, and he's started four games this season: two in the league, two in the League Cup, and six as a substitute, which, I mean, yeah, three of those were less than 10 minutes, which I'm not willing to judge him on. I think the thing is with Mark McNulty is that I don't think a loan move, obviously in this scenario, is what we've come up with, but I don't think in reality a loan move is necessarily the best for him. Obviously, there's a good reason why Paul Clement isn't playing him. He can see him every week and see him every day on the training pitch. But I think for someone like him, it's just a case of, getting to know the club, getting to know the Championship, and incrementally, perhaps maybe towards the spring or even next season, becoming a real more experienced know-how player.
Yeah, I mean, he's got experience in this division before and not necessarily done too well, but, you know, certainly deserved his chance after, you know, he got about 29, 30 goals in League Two last season. But if I may put a quick plug out for the interview with Adam Lafondre we did a couple of weeks ago, you know, we spoke to him about, you know, making that step up from League Two to Championship. And he just said that, you know, it was largely to do with the way that Brian McDermott sort of, you know, treated him and you know, gave him that opportunity, you know, that space to work his way into the side. Obviously, used him much as a super sub on a lot of occasions. And look, I think you see it quite a lot. I think when a player makes that move up a division, you know, it might take a little bit of time for them to adapt. And it might take them a couple of months or a season. George Evans is a recent example that I could think of. You know, obviously signed in January of 2015-16 under Brian McDermott. You know, didn't play an awful lot in that first half of the season, you know, sort of worked his way in and then became sort of quite a key part in that Jaap Stam team that got to the playoff final. So, yeah, look, I'm not sure how long. I think it might be a 3-year contract for McNulty. So, you know, it's certainly not worth giving up on him yet. But look, we've got, you know, the options ahead of him, Baldock, Bodvarsson, Matos, you know, so there is certainly competition there. But I suppose, you know, I'd say McNulty probably deserves a chance based on what we've seen of him so far, but you know we aren't seeing him every day in training, so and potentially Paul Clement seeing something that we're not at the moment.
And whoever replaces Paul Clement, be that in a few weeks, a few months, or a few years, might see differently to Paul Clement and bring him into the team. That's just something that I can't get out of my head at the moment as to who's this new manager going to be favouring and what sort of players are they going to want to change around and bring in? Because, I mean, being in that team at the moment, you must think, yeah, that's great, I'm playing. But, I mean, this manager's got his days are numbered almost in the current form. Guy J asks, since Brian McDermott became manager, scouting for players hasn't been as good. Nicky Hammond left, then signings haven't been as good. Neither has moving players on with. There's some odd contracts going around as well. He said about Jan Kermigan's deal. Nigel Howe left. Club was run poorly, in his opinion, after that. Need I go on, he says. And perhaps were we a little bit naive in thinking that post, obviously, these were the sort of 2006 guys, and a lot of them are still around for 2011-12 and the success in between that. Were we perhaps a bit naive in thinking that, you know, we're Reading Football Club, we can replace these guys with relative ease and not have to perhaps cycle through a few men such as Tevreden, and we've got Gianluca Canani at the moment, and obviously the managers, etc. Is it perhaps a bit naive to think that we can replace these guys almost like for like and everything still be rosy?
I think we were very used to that, you know, so-called Reading way, you know, with McDermott, Hammond, Howe and Sir John Medeski, of course. I think, you know, it's potentially sort of a case of, you know, you don't know how good you've got it until they're gone. But, you know, obviously, Ron Gourlay is the man in charge at the moment. Obviously, a lot of criticism is sort of heading his way. But I think on paper, you know, when you're looking to appoint a new CEO, you know, back in the summer of 2017, you know, Ron Gourlay certainly isn't a bad candidate. You know, look, he was the CEO at Chelsea and at Man United and at Nike, I think, you know, but you know, so he certainly got the credentials, but, you know, obviously it's panned out. He can't quite translate that to Reading. But I'm not sure who made the decision to bring Gourlay in. I mean, it was probably the Chinese owners. But, you know, those contracts, I think, obviously, when he first came in, he handed big contracts to, you know, the likes of John Swift and Liam Moore. And I think at the time, sort of everyone praised Gourlay for that, you know. We just come off the playoff final season, and Moore and Swift have been two of the key players. So, but as time's gone on, you know, it's become a little bit clear that perhaps Gourlay can't quite translate, you know, that experience he's got at that very high level. You know, it is very different to, you know, overseeing Chelsea, sorry, you know, to sort of overseeing the goings on at Reading. And yeah, that Kermigan contract was a little bit odd. And the Yaku Mato 4-year deal, I mean, despite his good form, I think 4 years is still potentially a little bit too long for him, considering, you know, sort of his record before that.
Oh, he's almost signed up for his testimonial, hasn't he, Yakumeta, yeah. with the length of deal that he's been given. And at the time, it seemed a lot worse than if you'd have given it him now. But it's just one of those things. Perhaps if you don't give John Swift his long contract, he keeps playing well and he doesn't drop off thinking he's done his job. And vice versa with Yakumeta, perhaps if you didn't give him that new contract, his head would have dropped or something like that. So there's all kinds of permutations and stuff that we don't know about. And yeah, for me, I think it's just unfortunate that it's not working at the moment, whether it's Ron Gourlay's fault or not, or the owners, or Paul Clements, or the players. It seems to me like it's a bit of everything, and exactly one of those being worse than the others. I'm not sure I can decide on exactly who that would be. Final question then. Theo asks, what is your opinion on the keeper situation? In his opinion, Yarkola has looked very good. He could have been worse in the last two games as he's made some great saves. I also could see us selling Vito Minoni in January, but I don't know if you guys agree. I'm not sure that we're going to be selling Vito Minoni in January, purely because when it comes to these sort of things, I'm not sure who's going to buy him. And the keeper situation in general is just a bit of an odd one, because we've got, as I said last week's show to Westy, we've got three decent championship goalkeepers, but none of them are perhaps any more than that.
No, I mean, I think I certainly agree with the point that one of them will probably move on in January, whether that's a loan or permanent, because, you've got three senior goalkeepers, which is quite rare, at a club. And you've got decent keepers coming through as well, the likes of George Lake, Lewis Ward and Luke Southland as well. So there's certainly an influx of keepers. But, whether one's better, than the other two, they've obviously all had their time between the six of the season, which is quite rare. I think, we're only 15 games in and we've used three different goalkeepers, and they've all done well. I mean, Yacola's come in and obviously made that, I think that those 10 saves against Millwall, which was the highest in the Championship this season. And, but we know he's got a mistake in him last season towards the end of Jaap Stam's sort of time in charge. Yakola was in goal and made a few errors, and people were sort of saying that was probably the last that we'd seen of him in a Reading shirt. But signed that contract extension in the summer, which I think was only 1 year. So obviously his deal is up in the summer. Sam Walker only came in, back in July. So as I say, I think one of them will go, but it's very difficult to sort of pick who will move on. I'd probably, lean towards maybe Vito Minoni going, but purely because he could probably get the most money in for the club, and certainly he's a sort of goalkeeper that won't want to be sitting on the bench for the rest of the season. But as you say, is anyone going to take a chance on him? Potentially he might move back to Italy. Obviously there was the sad passing of his mother last December, so whether he moves back to Italy to be close to his family, I'm not sure, but it's the same scenario for all three goalkeepers. Are they goalkeepers that you look at and say, other teams will definitely come in for them? I'm not so sure they are.
Well, the only thing that I know for sure is that we're currently paying three professional senior goalkeepers to be at the club, and you can only play one at one time. So it seems, I agree that something has to happen in January. If not, I'd be shocked if Yarkola stays for another season without him turning into the first team goalkeeper. And, it's hard to work out a way forward. I think Minoni probably is on the most. And you're right in saying that he's probably the one we could get the most reasonable amount of money for. But do you want to sell the most experienced of the three? And he's not getting that old. So it's a hard one. The club have almost backed themselves into a corner with it, I'm afraid. And it's not a bad situation to be in, because, as I say, they're all decent goalkeepers. Mm. But none of them are Premier League quality at this moment in time. And we've got to pick one out of three, and that means one's not on the bench. Hopefully one's injured, because that'll mean he's less annoyed than the other one who's on the bench. So I expect Yarkola will be starting at Bristol City, at home to Bristol City on Saturday. And we're going to round off the show now with a short preview of that game.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast. Any other business?
Now, Ollie, I know that you've got your weekend preview coming up on Thursday, so we'll keep this short and sweet. For 3 p.m. at the Mad Sad, Bristol City versus Reading FC. I'll throw a few minor stats at you before you get into the big ones on Thursday. We've lost our last two games against Bristol City after a 7-game winning streak. However, City themselves have kind of been a bit inconsistent this year. 1-2, drawn 2, lost 2 of their last six. All three of their last three games have ended 1-0 to one team or another. And the only other thing that I really noticed about Bristol City as the season started was that Andreas Weimann had started quite spectacularly with 5 goals in his first 5 games. However, he scored none in 9 now. So we're facing a team that really, you don't know which one's going to turn up. And I'm not sure that fills me with much confidence.
Yeah, and those were largely the issues that I spoke to the Bristol City fan about for the View from the Town, and that we'll feature in the weekend preview on Thursday. But yeah, look, obviously they sold Bobby Reid in the summer. So, you know, they had to replace his goals this season. As you mentioned, Weimann started quite well. But he's failed off a little bit. The Bristol City fan I spoke to sort of mentioned Famara Diétu and Nicolas Elias, and sort of two players that might potentially be their danger men, and that when you know that they do actually go on under Lee Johnson, sort of these losing patches, these up and down periods, and they did lose, I think, to Stoke. Last weekend.
Yeah.
So potentially, you know, they have been quite inconsistent, but I think our record actually, as you mentioned, quite decent against Bristol City. More often than not, I think we actually tend to do quite well away from home. Obviously, there was we've had two really good comebacks, 3-2 against them. I think Matthew Mansett scored the winner once there. Jan Kermigan got those two goals on New Year's Day or the 2nd of January in 2016-17. So at home, I'm not sure there's been too many classics. I think Shane Longmire scored twice in a 4-1 win, if my memory serves me correctly. But
a lot of 1-0s I seem to remember. Roberts scoring a penalty rebound in a 1-0 in 2012. So it tends to be at Ashton Gate where the fun happens, isn't it?
Certainly no classics at the Maleski. I'm not expecting it to be much of a entertaining contest this weekend. I think we have the home advantage, whether it's home advantage or not, considering our start to the season. But yeah, I think it should be a tight game. I think, as you mentioned, probably only a goal or two in it.
Where do you lie on the prediction league then? Because the week that we've just had, a lot of people have picked up a lot of points, actually. I predicted 2 defeats, which has moved me on to 7 points. Tom Crocker is sort of trailing behind on 4. Then Westies on 5. Sim on 8. Yourself and Johnny on 11 points. You nailed the was it the Birmingham result or was it the Swansea result?
Birmingham 2-1, I said, yeah.
Yeah, and Handbags nailed the Swansea result. So Handbags is up to 2nd place on 13 points. Wim out in front on 16 points. So now he's stopped working for the club. He's quite able to pick defeats, and that's why he's not doing too badly. So where are you placing your cards for this one?
Yeah, I think, as I said, it should be quite a tight game, and it could go either way. So for that reason, I'll probably go straight down the middle and say 1-1 for Saturday.
See, I am going to go for a 1-0 Bristol City win, because there are certain times when inconsistent teams turn up and play a bad team, they pick up their game and realise that they are themselves a good team. So, sadly, I'm going to have to be the Judas and go for the 1-0 Bristol City victory. Hopefully, I'll be proved wrong, as I have been on a number of times this season. So it's nothing to believe in too much. But, I mean, it's one of those games, isn't it, Ollie? It's just one of those home games that we've had a number of times this season. Come into it thinking that Bristol City are a good team, but not a great team. In years gone by, this is the sort of game we'd be favourites in, and I haven't checked the odds, but we probably aren't the favourites for this one. And it's a bit of an odd one.
Yeah, I mean, we've been up and down at home this season. Obviously, we got 2 of our 3 wins at home, both quite convincing wins in the result, if not the performance. The 3-0 win against Hull was really pleasing, probably the best result and performance of the season. And then the 3-1 win against Millwall, wasn't quite a 3-1 game for Reading, but we still got that 3-1. But then at the same time, we faced teams like Norwich, who obviously are now, I think, second or third, so they've done quite well since that game. But we were really poor in that game. The 1-0 defeat to QPR, we were really poor in. So it could go either way. But look, I think these two home games now against Bristol City, and especially against Ipswich a week later, we'll probably define whether Paul Clement stays or goes from Reading, to be honest. I think, especially after 2 away defeats, I think, with these two games now before the international break, I think if we lose one You know, I think even one defeat in these two games might potentially signal the end for Paul Clement, you know, because they are, you know, such crucial games, you know, especially, you know, when you are at the bottom, you know, the home games are the ones that you need to be picking up the points in to try and move away from that relegation zone. So, yeah, with two home games for the next international break, they could be make or break for Clement, I think.
Absolutely. It's going to be a very interesting few days at the club, particularly if Reading fail to win against Bristol City on Saturday. So all that's left then is to thank Ollie for popping by. We'll be back with you on Thursday on the Tarleton podcast.
No worries. Thanks very much. Yeah, look out for that. Me and Tom Crocker from the Working in Paper looking ahead to Bristol City versus Reading.
Awesome. And thank you, everyone, for listening to this edition of the Tarleton podcast. We now host Bristol City on Saturday. And, you know, who knows, maybe in a few weeks' time we'll be laughing and we'll have three wins in a row and we'll be knocking on the door of the playoffs. I mean, QPR have won three games in a row. How hard can it be? Come on, you arse.
You smile, funny how the crowns always leave a trail.